I should have stayed.
This is Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
409. Welcome back to Ottawa Now. Get your confessions in. It is Confession Thursday. Our question on Confession Thursday, based on our medical officer of health who forgot her skirt and admitted it on Twitter. She was rushing. She had an interview. She was putting a surprise together for her kids. And then she ran all the way to City Hall. Completely forgot she didn't have her skirt on. She had her jacket on. So I thought it was kind of a funny confession, and we're basing it off of that. Tell us about a time when you were rushing, you were out of time, and you were so hurried that you made a really embarrassing mistake, or you made some sort of glaring omission. Could have been at home, at work, at school. Let us know. Quebec has 933 new cases of COVID-19 today, and there are three regions that are now in partial lockdown, including Montreal and Quebec City. Police have been given new powers to enforce the law, and the fines are close to $1,500.
We cannot accept that a majority of people pay for the negligence of a minority.
Bars, restaurants, casinos, and movie theaters are shut down for 28 days. This server, now unemployed for the second time since March, says it feels very unfair.
How are we going to pay our rent? How are we going to pay the electricity? It's not to our fault. We're not responsible for that. So if they decide to shut us down, they should help us again.
Charles Landry is a bar owner who says he's had to lay off 15 staff members.
We've worked very hard and we listened to every recommendation we had from public health. And now it's just one more time. We're the one being picked to be close.
So even gatherings in public parks are not permitted. The message is stay home from the Quebec government. Private gatherings are restricted too. No home visits. And police are going to be out in full force enforcing that, according to the premier.
We cannot receive people in our homes in red zones. If you're inviting guests for a party, you're breaking the law. When this happens, police officers can give fines of $1,000.
So they can knock on your door and they can ask you for proof that you actually live there. And if you refuse the police entry, officers will be able to obtain a warrant faster through a new system. Some people are saying, isn't this overkill? Is this even legal? Let's ask our friend Boris Batensky, Bell Media legal analyst and partner at CrimLawCanada.com. Welcome back.
Thanks, Christy.
What is your impression of this? Very interesting. What do you think?
Well, first as a citizen and then second as a lawyer. So as a citizen, it's a clear signal and a message that Quebec is trying to take this second wave and potential second wave very seriously. They're trying to take whatever measures they think reasonably can be taken to keep the number for those infected and sick and going to hospital as low as possible. So it sends a clear message that that the province has taken this very, very seriously. As a lawyer, it's possible that it's there's overreach. There's definitely going to be a segment of the population that feels that it is. There are likely to be, in my view, at least some charter challenges to a fine that might be issued under this legislation. There may be business owners who decide to try to challenge this in court and claim that it goes too far and it violates their charter rights. And it's possible that those arguments will have some success. I mean, they're not Hail Marys, because these are real legitimate issues that at least in some cases can be raised. Whether the police can enter homes, as you've described, whether they can shut down certain businesses or prevent, you know, movie theaters from operating, especially in Quebec. I'll come back to that point in a minute. These are all very legitimate questions. And at some point, I suspect at least some of these are going to be answered in court.
Okay, so as an individual, we'll get on to businesses in just a moment. But as an individual, if you feel that this violates your rights, what could you do?
So leaving aside the possibility of sort of some test litigation, which, you know, in theory could be raised, more realistically what's going to happen is someone's going to be given a ticket in order to respond to it. They'll be charged with the contravention of this law, which carries with it a fine as a potential penalty. And that person, somebody, is likely, in my view, to bring in an argument, constitutional argument, that say that this law violates their rights, probably something like their rights to freedom of association under the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. I suspect that that argument's going to be raised. We do have, generally speaking, the rights to associate with who we want, where we want, go where we want. And if that's going to be restricted by government, then there has to be a valid and pressing objective behind that law. So ultimately, someone's going to challenge it, and the courts will decide whether or not the government's claim that this is a necessary response to COVID-19, whether or not there weren't less aggressive measures that could have been taken. The courts will have to decide whether or not this was a justifiable piece of legislation taking into account those principles.
I want to play a clip of Vince Guzzo. We had him on the show yesterday. He's the owner of the Guzzo movie theater chain in Quebec, and he says he might take it to court.
In my case, I'm considering legal action. I'm the one who's handling the legal action side. And we're looking at it, and we're saying, you know, would we be entitled to go get an injunction to force the government to let us operate until we do become a proven risk factor, because now you have one, two, three, you know, in other words, I've always told the government, shut down businesses on an individual basis who are creating the problem, but do not shut down an industry.
So for a business owner like that, it's a little bit more complicated, right?
It is, and I'm not sure if this is the gentleman that's the owner of the cinema that I've read some other reports about. If it is, I mean, Quebec has got some unique aspects in their law that we don't have in other provinces. So, for example, the Quebec Charter of Rights includes protections for economic rights, which are, generally speaking, excluded everywhere else in Canada. So that's actually a significant aspect of what a business owner might be able to argue in Quebec. I don't necessarily agree that you'd need to show that there's an individual business that has created the risk itself or through the business itself directly before you can order it to be shut down. I'm not so sure that would be a correct statement of the law. I doubt a court would find that. I think it would be quite appropriate for the government to shut down an entire industry if there was a significant amount of data or study that suggested that the entire industry presented a significant risk factor. So I think this is going to come down to what information does the government have, what science is there behind these types of decisions, and if they're justifiable, and obviously they're well-meaning, there's no doubt about that, but whether or not a court agrees that there was no lesser step that could be taken to lessen the risk, that's really what it's going to come down to. I don't think going one-off business by business is going to be the argument that prevails, but it's simply whether or not shutting down movie theaters is a necessary step in order to reduce the risk of COVID-19.
Boris Vitensky, pretty interesting times that we're living in right now. A lot of interesting legal questions. We appreciate you coming on the show so much. Thank you.
Thanks, Christy, for having me. Have a great day.
Boris Vitensky, Bell Media legal analyst and partner at crimlawcanada.com. Very complex questions, which is why we brought an expert on, because, surprise, I'm not a lawyer. Why don't you say so?
You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
/4:23, welcome back to Ottawa Now. Pretty sunny out there this afternoon, only 14 degrees, but nice sunshine. Soak it up tomorrow down to 11, and we look like we've got showers in the forecast. By the way, if you're like me and you've been wondering, why the heck was September so cool? It wasn't just your imagination. It was a cooler than normal September, and actually quite dry in September, but it is looking up. In the final 3 months of the year, according to Environment Canada, it is expected to be warmer than normal. So Environment Canada has issued its Ontario weather review, and they looked at the temperatures and precipitation in September, and they said the data shows it was actually very cool. But it's going to be warmer October, November, and December. Above normal temperatures and below average precipitation. I'll take it. I hope it's right, but I'll take it. Get your confessions in. It is Confession Thursday. We're asking you today, please email in, ottawanow@cfra.com. What embarrassing or silly thing happened to you when you were rushing or overwhelmed? Thank you for the confessional music. I love that. That's really getting me ready. It could be at work, could be travel, could be in a social gathering. This music is so silly. At a time when you were running behind, you know, it's something that always happens. When you're rushing, you're not really paying attention, you're multitasking, and it often will lead to nonsensical or ridiculous mix-ups. OttawaNow@CFRA.com. Get your confessions in. We only confess if you confess. I want to talk to parents as well, and you can also email in on this. How do you feel about the comments being made by the Medical Officer of Health, Dr. Vera Etches, this morning, who says that she's got some concerns about sports activities inside this fall?
I do think that we need to take a look at recreational activities where there's groups of people indoors. That's concerning to me. That's an opportunity if we stop those activities to have some progress in number of people who are in close contact would decrease. That would help.
That would be such a disappointment for so many kids that are used to extracurriculars, playing indoor soccer, playing hockey. It's such a huge part of their lives. And the notion that it could be up in the air, that it could be on the chopping block, pretty rough. But again, I understand that it's something that is a high-risk activity. We were talking to Dr. Abdu Sharkawi. You're breathing heavily. You're close. He said even if you're not body checking or right up against one another, that you are perspiring and you're just breathing deeply, which means that the chance of those viral droplets getting on each other is a little bit more high risk, but not what a lot of parents and especially not what a lot of kids want to hear. So get your emails in on that. Meantime, if you're somebody who goes to Subway Sandwich, you'll want to hear this. I'm talking about, you know, Subway. That Subway, the one with the footlongs. Subway Sandwich bread is too sugary to be legally defined as bread. That's not according to me. I've always thought it was kind of sweet. That's according to Ireland's Supreme Court. They made a ruling, and why are they talking about the sugar content of bread? Well, because there was a tax dispute. So a franchisee, somebody who owns one of these Subway outlets, came forward and in Ireland said that the bread shouldn't be taxed. Staple fruit foods like bread are not taxed. And so the franchisee was arguing that takeaway items, including the sandwiches, coffees, and teas, were not something that should be taxed because the bread is a staple. The franchisee argued this, but the court said no. And here's the quote from the ruling. It says, all six of the company's bread options, Italian white bread, Italian urban cheese, nine grain wheat, hearty Italian, nine grade multi seed, and honey oat, all of them are too sugary, according to the court, to qualify as bread. I always thought it was kind of sweet. But it makes you wonder if the veggies qualify as veggies. They always look a little bit sad, don't they? And the lettuce always seems a little bit suspicious. Don't get me wrong. I like Subway. I just don't feel like I'm getting my veggie content when I eat the subs. It's 4:27. Some good news on a Thursday afternoon if you're an AC/DC fan. AC/DC is back. They've announced a reunion and a possible forthcoming album. The rumors were true. They've been putting out these teasers on their social media sites. And now they've officially released the first photo of the reunited band. So you've got Angus Young, Brian Johnson, Cliff Williams, Phil Rudd, and Stevie Young, the same configuration that played on their most recent album in 2014, Rock or Bust. And they're going to be back. We're going to go out with some AC/DC. You're listening to Ottawa Now on News Talk 580 CFRA. We're rocking out this afternoon. Lots coming up on the show. Stay with us.
sugar high. What a new 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 sugar high.
You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
So many elements of our lives have changed as a result of COVID-19, and it pains me to think of kids not being able to play indoor sports this fall and winter, but sadly, that may be the reality. Our medical officer of health, Dr. Vera Etches, tells CTV Morning Live that she naturally has some concerns about kids breathing heavily and COVID-19 transmission through indoor sports activities.
I do think that we need to take a look at recreational activities where there's groups of people indoors. That's concerning to me. That's an opportunity if we stop those activities to have some progress in number of people who are in close contact would decrease. That would help.
So this comes at a time when the top doctor is urging residents to limit your contacts to household only, or one or two people that you rely on for support beyond that. But of course, it's not easy for families to hear. And it's not easy for people that run soccer clubs and hockey clubs. Joining me right now, I have Nazir Patel on the line, Vice President of the Ottawa Gloucester Hornets Soccer Club. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. Thanks so much for coming on the show. So I understand you guys are still playing right now.
Yes, we are still playing up until probably Sunday. We're getting ready to start our winter season, which, you know, traditionally begins indoors, but we're extending our outdoor component because of COVID. So we'll play probably October 13th, November 2nd, all outside before we go inside.
Chilly, yes, soccer game on November 2nd.
We're still playing. That's all that matters. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. And, you know, I used to play midfield back in the day when I was a little bit speedier. And I can't imagine that. That's a cool game that you'd be playing outside. I guess just run really fast. Try to stay warm.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So what do you think when you hear those comments and, you know, the medical officer of health is saying that she's got some outlying concerns here?
Well, obviously, I mean, the summer has been challenging for us. You know, we're a not-for-profit community club. We're in the process of expanding our programs, and we were in good shape until COVID hit. But for us, always the guiding principle has been safety of our members and our players. We've been guided by Ontario Soccer and by Public Health Canada Soccer, so we operated according to those guidelines. We were able, even in the summer, to run physical distancing sessions with the guidance of our great technical staff led by Jade Acosta, where, you know, players were given boxes to operate within. But we still managed to get a high level of sort of technical development. And again, for us, the most important part was the social, emotional aspect of sports, getting the kids back in the field. We were able to do that. And at the same time, you know, we offered really challenging, high-level technical development, which you as a midfielder can appreciate. So lots of passes, lots of drills that kept all our players engaged. And surprisingly, we just started a 5U8 program a couple of years ago for little guys and girls, and they thrived in those conditions because of the coaching they got. And in all honesty, I mean, our club's always operated along those principles of, you know, high technical development, but good, important aspect of social emotional development in sports. So COVID was challenging for us, but we managed to come through, and I think we didn't really lose much even in terms of technical development and enjoyment. And so we're looking forward to the winter, whatever that holds. And obviously we're just, you know, we are, you know, at the mercy of what public health dictates, and we're willing to do, you know, whatever they say we can do.
Yeah, the thing about little kids playing soccer, or at least it used to be this way when I grew up playing soccer, was that they all kind of crowd around the ball. They don't get the idea of spreading out and passing to one another, and they're all just following each other in a clump around the soccer ball. So that's concerning when it comes to COVID, right? And not being able to wear a mask. Are there any players that are wearing masks?
So because we were outside in the summer, very few players wore masks. We encouraged them to do so if they wanted to. It was not mandated, but we recommended it. to your point, we were quite surprised, and you know, intuitively we felt the same thing. How are we going to keep these kids from bunching up, which is sort of a natural inclination anyway? And then, you know, within COVID, it's even more problematic. We actually ran sessions, and again, I got to tip my hat to our technical staff, you know, led by Jada Costa and all our coaches, where, you know, parents were allowed on the field with their child, so they were able to sort of pull them apart if they had to. But we ran sessions where we could keep them in there. We actually created little boxes for them, so we needed lots of cones, and they actually stayed in their boxes, and we worked on just ball mastery, technical development. It was at a very high rate and pace, so there was a lot of cardio fitness, and they just loved it. And we were shocked that they were able to actually maintain that distancing. When we moved into phase two, which was for modified contact, again, there was some contact allowed. We never, you know, we never forced players that weren't comfortable with that. And, you know, we also had in the older age groups, we were able to get really creative. You know, necessity is the mother of invention. And we would just put a jersey on a player and said, that player can't be tackled. And mm-hmm. only on a number of touches. So they were still participating, playing, but they weren't doing any physical contact whatsoever. Mm. So we kept it challenging. I mean, we actually even run a showcase academy program for those who want to enter university. So that's a high-level player. And we were able to run sessions without any contact where we kept up the technical, you know, the technical development, tactical skills. And they enjoyed it and kept coming back. So we operated with what we were given, and we did the best that we could. And luckily, you know, touch wood, we didn't have any cases in our club in the summer, and people kept coming back. And again, you know, obviously a factor was the fact that we were outdoors, so that helped a lot. Yeah. We had a good facility. We had more space, you know, than we needed, really. We could give a full team, usually it's half of a field for an 11-a-side field. We could get 10, 11 players on a full field. So there were literally, you know, 10 feet between players when we were doing the physical distancing sessions. So we were still getting that soccer, touching the ball, and most importantly for, you know, for kids is seeing their friends, you know, getting out there.
Yeah. That's the huge part, right, Nazir? Right? And you can talk about skill and training and cardio, but at the end of the day, it's also about friendship. It's about social development. It's about learning to be part of a team. There's so many important lessons that can come from playing soccer, from playing any sport. So I think that's such a huge part of this.
Precisely. And as I said, that's always a guiding principle in our club is the, you know, the long-term player development, the social, emotional development of the player. And that comes with what you just said. And as a former soccer player and a midfielder, you know that team building and being part of a team is probably more important than anything else. So we've always tried to combine and will continue to that social emotional development with high level technical development, high level, you know, for the player that wants that as well. Because we run programs anywhere from, you know, all the way from under 5 to under 18. So we offer it all. And again, from under 5 to under 18, I coach an under 17 girls, under 18 team. They love the social part just as much as the under fives, right? So that's central for us and for them.
Nazir, thanks so much for coming on the show. We wish you all the best. And, you know, Environment Canada is saying it's going to be a warmer than normal fall. So that's okay. Good news for the extended
for
season. All right.
Appreciate that. Okay. Thank you very much.
You take care. Right. Nazir Patel, Vice President of the Ottawa Gloucester Hornets Soccer Club. I want to be a better me,
a better man. You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
That's why our government is proud to be investing $461 million to increase wages temporarily for over 147,000 eligible PSWs and direct support workers. With this investment, we are enhancing wages for eligible workers that deliver publicly funded personal support services in home and community care, long-term care, and public hospitals, as well as similar direct personal support in the social service sector. This wage enhancement will start today.
That's the Health Minister Christine Elliott announcing earlier today that personal support workers, or PSWs in Ontario, will be getting a $3 per hour pay bump, effective immediately until March. Earlier on in the show, I spoke with the leader of the Ontario Green Party, Mike Schreiner, about this, because the NDP and the Green Party have both been very vocal about this. And today they've been speaking out about it, saying it's not enough. So I got Mike Schreiner's reaction to the news.
Welcome, but insufficient. PSWs are some of the lowest paid frontline healthcare workers out there, but doing essential work, caring for our elders and our loved ones. And I welcome a pay increase, but it should be made permanent, not just for 6 months. And it doesn't address the staffing shortages that were reported in our long-term care facilities. The government's own staffing review over the summer showed that. And it doesn't address the need for PSWs, particularly in our long-term care homes, to be guaranteed full-time secure jobs.
Okay, so the premier was asked about extending this, making it permanent, and he hinted that something could be coming in March. Here's what he said.
Stay tuned. We're going to help you moving forward. But in the meantime, you're going to have a fair raise, and I'm going to be behind you. We're going to get this done.
So he's hinting that he'll be working on it. What do you make of that?
Well, why not just make it a permanent right now? I mean, I asked the Minister of Long-Term Care in question period a few weeks ago why they didn't start hiring more PSWs over the summer, given we knew there was a shortage. We knew we had to have our long-term care homes and our home care system and hospitals prepared for a second wave. And the minister said to me at the time, well, you can't just hire people overnight. She's right. That's why they should have started in the summer, and that's why they should make the pay raise permanent, because you're going to be able to attract more PSWs into the profession if you can guarantee them they're going to be paid well. I can tell you there are a number of PSWs that are just feeling overworked and underpaid. They're leaving the profession to get jobs in, you know, other areas, and oftentimes being paid a better wage. And so if we're going to retain PSWs, if we're going to attract more PSWs, we need to pay them a fair wage, guarantee them full-time work.
What about the students that were in there in the summer that were helping out and now they're back in school? Is there a way to get them back in there if we need the hands on deck?
Well, I certainly think the government needs to be, you know, looking at all options. But the bottom line is if we're going to care for our seniors, then we need to, and we should have started ramping up staffing in the summer, and not just PSWs, but also registered nurses. We know there are staffing shortages. There were reports that came out that said an investment of between $1.6 and $1.8 billion would be enough to hire additional staff, particularly for long-term care, and to pay better wages to retain those staff and to prepare us for a second wave. And, you know, the premier didn't act. And so now they finally are being forced to act in a reactive way. And it's certainly welcome. Like, I don't think there's any PSW who's going to dismiss a wage increase. But if you really want to solve the challenge, short-term and long-term, is we need to hire more staff. We need to give PSWs a permanent pay raise, a living wage, and we need to guarantee them full-time work. And so that's what I would encourage the premier to do. He calls PSWs heroes, and they are heroes. So let's treat them like heroes.
I do have to underscore the fact that understaffing has been going on for quite some time. That's not just a legacy of this government. You would concede that?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, the understaffing definitely predates
long-term
the government
care homes.
In
yeah.
Long-term care, for sure. And the lack of sufficient wages for PSWs predate this government as well. So I can't put all of it on the current government, but certainly this current government's had time to fix it. And I think after, you know, just the horrible tragedy we experienced in long-term care in the spring should have created an imperative for them to address it over the summer.
All right, before I let you go, I've got you on the line. I'm speaking to the Ontario Green Party leader, Mike Schreiner. I want to ask you about the approach that the premier is taking in Ontario. He was asked today, are you going to consider shutting down restaurants and bars? And he said, not imminently, nothing right now. We'll watch the numbers. Right now, we're just keeping an open mind. Everything is on the table. Nothing is happening right away. Do you agree with that approach?
What I am recommending to the premier is that he takes what I would call a surgical approach and not a sledgehammer approach. So let's look at the numbers. Where are infection rates going up? Where is the spread taking place? And let's take action targeted there. So, for instance, if it's weddings in Peel region, then let's place restrictions there. If it's bars and restaurants in Toronto, then let's place restrictions there. Rather than doing an across-the-board hammer, because there's so many small businesses that are really struggling to hang on, and we want to make sure that we take aggressive action to contain the spread of the virus so that we can avoid a full lockdown, which I think would put so many small businesses out of business.
Green Party leader Mike Schreiner speaking to me earlier today about the raise for PSWs, which is temporary. Now, when the premier was asked about it, why is it temporary? Why not make it permanent? He hinted that he's going to try, he's going to fight to make it permanent. He said, I'll be looking into that. It is 4:59, lots to come in the final hour of the show. Coming up next, you don't want to miss this. An infectious disease expert who says he believes that Ontario police should have the same power as police in Quebec. In Quebec right now, they can come to your door, they can knock, and they can ask for proof that you live there. This is to discourage gatherings and any house visits. We'll hear from an Ontario doctor who believes we should be doing that here as well, coming up next.